Blog Talk Radio.
Assalamu alaikum, and welcome to A Time for Justice. A Time for Justice is a show on the Elevated Places Network, and we would like to welcome you to today's presentation of A Time for Justice. Thank you for listening, and you are listening to your host, Sister Attorney Pamela Muhammad. And our show, A Time for Justice, discusses legal and current events in a roundtable discussion, interviews with legal minds. We discuss this country's centuries-long failure to apply, uphold, and enforce the laws, and the overall failures of the legal system to give justice, and the negative impact these failures have had on Black people and their Black families. Ultimately, we want fair dealing. We want justice under the law. But all too often, this is not the actions that we see. Tonight, we'll not make those excuses for conduct, racist conduct, often seen, which are really just distractions from the truth, which is the path to justice and equal protection. So let's talk about just, fair, and equitable solutions, which are in the best interest of the people. Let's remove the distractions. So I'm really excited tonight because we have a really awesome show and a really interesting topic. This topic is entitled Serving Families in Times of Crisis, and we're going to talk about the topic of family law. Family law, serving families in times of crisis. Now, it's very interesting because when we talk about family law, and I'm really excited to really discuss this topic, but when we're talking about family law, we want to talk about also how we can sometimes contribute to our own failures and flaws, and how the law, when we look at it from the wrong perspective or when we aren't aware of the pitfalls that we need to avoid, will sometimes cause us more crisis when our families are in a time of. Ultimately, we want to encourage strong families, strong legacies, and this is what the show is about tonight. Now, what is family law? Family law is the law relating to family disputes and obligations. And as we're going to hear, and as we all know, it has grown dramatically since the 70s. And it's really sometimes used to see when we talk about youth violence, when we talk about women violence, when we talk about abuse of women, when we talk about some of the pitfalls that we're facing right now, we want to look at strong families or how to create strong families, but we also need to talk about some of the things that are dragging our families down in these family law settings, and really we want to give you some advice on how to preserve your family even when you're in crisis. So with that being said, I want to bring on our guest for tonight. Our guest for tonight is an attorney. Her name is Sister Kiana Manns, Kiana X Manns. And Kiana is an attorney, and she is actually a child welfare law specialist. She's also a mediator and a respected family law practitioner who cares about her clients and her community. She is most proud to be the mother of five beautiful daughters whom she affectionately girls. They continue to inspire her to continue to advocate for families in our judicial system. As a young woman, she attended California State University, Northridge. She received a BA in sociology and criminology. Subsequently, she obtained her Juris Doctorate degree from Whittier Law School, and in 2010, she's also received a mediation certification, and she earned a certificate also, in 2019, she earned a certificate in intimate partner violence, and she established the Man's Law Office Atonement and Dispute Resolution System Center here in Houston, the historic area of Sunnyside. So we can talk more about Sister Kiana. What we will say is that she was voted as Houston's top lawyer, one of Houston's top lawyers in 2016, receiving recognitions of excellence and distinction in 2018. She does a lot of cases dealing with the child welfare, the foster care. She does a lot of family law matters such as divorce, custody, enforcement, child support. She is actually a teacher. She's taught some character development in a non-for-profit organization known as Queendom Come. So Sister Kiana is a major volunteer in the community. And without further ado, I'm going to open up her mic. She's known to us here at the Elevated Places family. She's my sister. And let me open up Sister Kiana's mic. Sister Kiana? Let's see. I might have done it wrong. Let's see. Sister Kiana.
Yes, ma'am. Assalamualaikum.
Waalaikum salam, Sister Kiana. How are you doing, ma'am?
I am good, excited about this topic, and ready to, you know, hopefully help some people kind of get through some of the things that we, you know, you and I deal with on a daily basis, and, you know, just to maybe, you know, touch someone in terms of, you know, being involved in, you know, what it is that they're dealing with, they're going through, and find better ways to help them handle it.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much for taking up your time, because you and I talked today about this topic, and it really is something that is very near and dear to our hearts, to help families, and it just touches so much. So I wanted to start with an article by Brother Michael Z. Muhammad. It's entitled The Fall of America Amid Division, Destruction, and Death, because when we're talking about families in crisis, and we're talking about being a servant to families in crisis, so we know service is the action of helping or doing work for someone. But the crisis that we see, and Brother Michael, of course, he talked about the fall of America as, the book, The Fall of America by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. But he also talked about how America's decline is also evident by the destruction of families. He says crime, family, and children, youth pathologies and behavior, education and popular culture and religion, and government solutions that compound social problems are part of the decline. And that's a note from William Bennett in his work, The Index of Leading Cultural Indicators. He went on to say that the divorce rate has more than doubled since 1960. It is the highest in the world. Nearly one in two families are headed by single parents or involved some other non-traditional living arrangement. They talk about, you know, abortions, how they skyrocketed since 1972, while one-third of all births in the United States today are out of wedlock, is what this William Bennett's book talks about. It talks about, goes on to say how, you know, a large amount of black families are born to people who are not married, or, you know, you talk about poverty, you talk about all of this may be leading to some of the problems and the ills that we want to talk about, because what is being witnessed, Brother Michael's article goes on to say, is what is being witnessed today is what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad spoke on and prophesied years ago. America is locked in a losing battle to keep her power, he wrote. America, in trying to hold her place as the greatest power among the nations of the earth, is one of the most troubled countries on earth today. And so, you know, Sister Kiana, as you and I, we encourage, as members of the Nation of Islam, we encourage marriage. We know that marriage is a, you know, family, marriage and family life in Islam is essential to nation building and security. You know, but all too often in our area of practice, people come to us from out of these troubled statistics. And so this is where we are coming into this. So I wanted to, you know, just kind of open up by you telling us a little bit about, you know, why do you think family law is important, and any opening remarks you want to give on this topic.
Yeah, I mean, that was an awesome excerpt that you read, and it's so very real. And what we see in our reality in dealing with these issues and families on a day-to-day basis. And I just really think that you cannot get more intimate with a person than being involved in their family in the way that we are, especially when it comes to relationships, of course, marital relationships and situations involving your children. These are very intimate issues that we deal with on a day-to-day basis as family law practitioners, which makes it, to me, more serious than a lot of the other practice areas that I've, of course, could have been involved in. And I think it makes my work that much meaningful in terms of the counselor side of it, because, of course, we also have that ability as practitioners, not to just be litigators, but to also be counselors. And that part, by the grace of God, has been the most rewarding for me in being able to work with families and to assist them in, like you said, the time of crisis where they come to me, because that's pretty much all we get. I don't necessarily get too many happy interventions into people's lives that I'm working with. I think for me, my most rewarding, of course, are the adoptions. But even with that, there's a tinge or an undertone of sadness because another family, of course, was dismantled, or a relationship was terminated. on that end. So these are very serious and I think delicate situations that we have a lot of power to influence in a positive way, the best that we can, of course, dealing with the facts and circumstances. And so that's, I think, that's why I kind of gravitated to family law,
yes,
because it was not something on my radar in law school, even though I'm seeing that, you know, a law makes no mistakes. I've been prepared for this in working with, you know, special education advocacy and just so many things and seeing the family on different levels and dealing with different agencies and positions, that I just kind of gravitated to this area, but kind of got a rude awakening when I got there
in
the early 2000s, because it was very adversarial. And like being a member of the Nation of Islam, like that is heart-wrenching. To see some of the things that, you know, we see and observe in the interactions between people when, you know, the relationship is being dissolved or children are in the middle of a custody battle. And so I had to kind of get my bearings and find my way. And really, it was a process. Honestly, it was a process. For me to fit in to this type of system with the background and, you know, of course, the belief system that I come from. So I know you have that experience as well. And, of course, you being in it for years and being a mentor of, you know, kind of preparing me for the craziness of it from some attorneys, and to be able to kind of maintain my discipline and my ethics was a great introduction for me in choosing this area of law. And so I think it's extremely important, especially for us in the Black community, to have people that look like us, you know, our circumstances, our culture, to bring some real counsel into the mix of the litigation when it is that we find our families in this type of, you know, crisis.
Beautiful, beautiful, Sister Kiana. You are so correct. And I have to add that Sister Kiana also is a happily married sister in the MGT, long-standing marriage, beautiful brother David, and family person. And so I want to put this in context for our listeners, because one of the reasons why we chose this show, why I chose this show, is because of the pettiness that we see in society that really drives a lot of the chatter that we see on the media. We see it in YouTube. For example, I heard some person making fun of another man, Black man, saying, oh, he's broke. You know, we know the Real Housewives of Atlanta. We know all of that materialism and all that quote-unquote bickering that is being really cultivated and encouraged in our community. And so the pettiness we bring on ourselves by encouraging this bickering and fighting and lack of encouragement to settle differences, you know, shows like the have and have nots, you know, this is what is seen in cases where parents are not married and children are involved. And so sometimes this attitude that is being just promulgated, where you've got thousands of dollars being spent and it's just a circus environment, this is costing people's lives, children's lives. You know, anger is resulting in violence. There's an article I just want to quote from real fast. It was another Final Call article entitled "Mainstream Pushes False Damaging Stereotypes About Black Families." And so it went on to say, millions of Americans form their opinions of Black families through the media. Disturbing and inaccurate portrayal of Black communities. said Mr. Robison, Executive Director of Color of Change. And so the current media landscape is shaped by decision makers who continue to inaccurately depict black fathers as absent, black mothers as bad decision maker, and black families as destabilizing forces in society. So these are the types of, this is the environment, this is the background where people are coming into these courtrooms across America, many times with white judges and white people in our families in the forms of ad litems. And so we want to talk about this. Sister Kiana, let me ask you this. You know, when people come to us in these crises, what do you think they have to lose that they should, first of all, really consider before moving forward? I know you and I talked earlier, a lot of times when, if I'm in a situation where I have to counsel someone in, you know, worst case scenario, divorce, because like you say, we are counselors and we are litigators, but I'm always going to ask them to consider reunification. We're going to always talk mm-hmm. to them in that standpoint and say, have you talked to your minister? Let's talk to the minister. Mm-hmm. But in those instances where they're going to make that step, I think it's important to look at your legacy and what is it that you could possibly lose if you don't have the right attitude about settling differences in these cases.
I can say, like I said, it was a rude awakening, and coming in, I know for a fact that I lost plenty of clients based on the unrealistic expectations of people from media, from, you know, just maybe hearing, you know, this is what it's supposed to look like and this is how it's going to be done, from people who don't actually practice in the area, just from various sources. And so when you or I kind of come into it and we have a different belief system or, you know, way of viewing the family, then they come to us and it's strange to them for someone to ask, you know, have you, you know, considered counseling? Do you really believe, you know, this is, you know, the direction that you want to go in, to ask those questions? And I still do to this day ask those questions, but I do know because it wasn't my reaction, my initial reaction is, yeah, I'm going to take, you know, everything they got and, you know, we're going to stomp on them and, you know, saying foul words and, you know, using language about the other person that I have no clue about, you know, besides what you're telling me. But that's kind of the rev up emotional state that some of this propaganda get people in. And so mm-hmm. when I was very real and very authentic, like, okay, this is what we're dealing with. This is the reality. Even when we have the ink on this order with, you know, the divorce being finalized and me giving you everything that you can absolutely request and desire on this paper, at the end of the day, I'm going to go home to my family and you still going to have to deal with him and he's still going to have to deal with you for the rest of this child's life. It's not even till 18 when the order expires, because we don't detach ourselves from our children. You know, once it is, the relationship is no longer. I'm going to be there at college graduation. I'm going to be there at the birth of the child. You're going to be there as well. So it has to be a level of civility and some understanding about that. And sometimes when you inject that into your representation, it is perceived based on this whole, like you were saying, housewives mentality of this cat fighting and all of that, that you're weak. I know for certain by me having a certain position and really the best interest of the family at the forefront of the way that I practice and how I handle these cases, have had, you know, people walk out the door and, you know, go find somebody who they thought was nasty and, you know, ready for a fight. And I can tell you that I can have stories of all of those people who did that and called me back or had me to handle their modifications after it did not go in the direction that they thought it was going to go. And after it was just a drama-filled mess that they weren't prepared to continue for years to come
right.
after, you know, they got into the gutter, you know, with all of that foolishness. And so yeah. I have, you know, been very grateful that by Allah's permission, he has allowed me to see, maintain your ground, because you are needed. People do require this of you in terms of propelling their legacy and having their family to move forward and all of that. And don't worry about the money, because that was a big thing. Should I, you know, put on this persona or have, you know, feed into this foolishness based on media and, you know, all of this in the marketing, you know, to gain this. I'm in the business of being a divorce attorney. And
yeah.
I can say I have not suffered financially.
Yeah.
And my work and my reputation, you know, by the grace of God, has been able to speak for me, because people really just want you to do what you say you're going to do, to work hard on their behalf. All of the other stuff comes with the emotional stuff that we can really help and assist with in the counseling aspect of what we do, and also how we handle ourselves as a practitioner. I will
yes,
never,
ma'am.
You know, be foul to the other parent. I will never curse out the other attorney. You know, always being respectful, stern, of course, pursuing, you know, the goal that me and my client has set out, but there's still a way, you know, to handle things, especially when we're having the best interest of the family always at the forefront of our mind, which is supposed to be, you know, everybody's position in dealing with the family and family law. But of course, you know, like you said, we have other things that come in and kind of cloud that where,
yes,
you know, we suffer as a community kind of buying into that madness.
Yes, ma'am. That's beautiful. But let me put it in this from this perspective as well. Now, we're Muslims, and so I looked at the Quran today, and chapter 65 is entitled The Divorce. And I think it has having the attitude of providing. And so that's what brothers, and I want to go back to that. But what I want to talk about is whoever goes beyond the limits of Allah, he wrongs his own soul. It also says the utmost carefulness must therefore be exercised in the matters of divorce. That's footnote 25:12.
Yeah.
And it calls for the sparing use. It also talks about how the injunction, keep your duty to Allah, is used throughout this chapter. And so I thought it was very important, because what we're talking about is really going beyond the limit. And the courts are like that spider. And so people will have expectations that if I go in here and I have all my pain on my forehead and the judge is going to, and we fight, you know, but that's not how courts work. And oftentimes that will absolutely ruin people. It'll ruin, like, financially, you know, because you're being billed at hourly rates. And revenge is never a reason to come into court. And it, I think, Sis Kiana, we really have to make that just plain to people, because this is what the media is really playing up. This is what we're seeing with these celebrities. And you got a lot of lawyers out there that are willing to, I say, fleece your wealth and your mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're
absolutely
crazy. Behind some of this revengefulness that people at each other with. So I don't know. Did you want to say anything about that topic, Sister Kiana?
Yes.
Revenge.
I think that what you're saying is so key. I want to say there's a time and a place for everything, and it's not the time or the place, you know, to deal with all of the hurts, you know, that has, you know, come your way, because I'm sure that you've delivered a few as well. This is a very adversarial type of system that we have, and so it is very costly. It is very costly for me to file motions and to get prepared for hearings contesting very minor issues. And I think that once we kind of get involved to look at our attorney in a certain way as kind of being a guide and a protector of mm-hmm. our position and of you know, in what it is that we're trying to do, that also puts a responsibility on the attorney to preserve your wealth, you know, and
right.
some of your assets and all of that. But, of course, we're a consumer nation, you know, we're about getting money, and you don't have a lot of ethics involved. And so as a litigant or person who's in this crisis, you have to be mindful of that. Is it really beneficial for you to go this route in this way right now by expending thousands of dollars, you know, on something that actually could be worked out outside of the courtroom or in a different type of arena, like a mediation or something that would be less costly? If you have an attorney that's always ready to file something and go in and fight and not try to use other alternative ways of resolving your matter, then I don't know if that's somebody who's actually looking out for you, who's
exactly.
actually trying to preserve, you know, your assets and your wealth. And I tell my clients all the time, like, are you sure? Because this is what it's costing you. We can send a letter, you know, we can meet, we can have a phone conference. And handle this in a better way. If there is a way to resolve it, where, you know, they can be a little more hands on, and we not have to use up court time, not have to call in witnesses, and not have to do all of that, because in this adversarial type system that we have, every time we go and get involved, especially in the court system where there's children involved, it's trauma. We're creating trauma, so the less you know, court involvement and things that we can kind of work out on the side, or, you know, not in this arena, because sometimes it's not even necessary actually to deal with certain things in this arena, that we should be able to do, and we as practitioners should, you know, guide our client in that direction. And actually, a lot of I don't deal with, I have represented, you know, celebrities and people in the entertainment industry and different things. They don't actually like spending a lot of money either. I don't know why this whole thing is, you know, being publicized like it's the thing to do, but they're trying to not pay, you know, a lot of their attorney fees. They're trying to get them decreased, you know, while you're out here taking on this image like I have to be in the court every 5 minutes because it's time to litigate, and don't really have the money to do that, and so
right.
you're taking away from your family's, you know, financial status based on something that's not even a true reality, you know, for other people who actually do have money, you know, to do it. So I would just, you know, advise them to find someone that will guide them a little better, and to make choices where you're not putting yourself in a in a situation of, lack, because you're bent on, being in this emotional tug of war in dealing with everything in the court system.
Yes, ma'am. That's beautiful. And you know what? I tend to think that the trap that has been set for Black people in America to keep us enslaved, to break up our families, is really alive in these court systems by bashing and tearing down our families and then taking our money, making us think that this is the only way. And one of the secrets one of the things that I experience is that this is something that has been going on really around 30 years, where the litigation attorneys, and by saying litigation, there are two ways to resolve cases. You can solve them amicably. You can sit down. You can make agreements. You can, really try to put down some of that paperwork, or you can go to trials where you have people with boxes and boxes and boxes of files, and they're in court, attorney mans. I'm sure, you all are sometimes in court for days and weeks arguing about things like dogs and, just all kinds of stuff that could be worked out. But what happened was that those litigators who used to make a lot of money in torts and a lot of money doing other things, they moved over to family law. So your 401k then becomes my source of income. Your 401k that you worked for years and years and years for, then this is where some of these oftentimes Caucasian attorneys and sometimes just people who are following what the trend is, they're willing to work your money and your legacy into poverty. And with that comes a lot of trauma. So I want to just encourage everyone, if you want to make a comment or you have a question for Attorney Mans, please get in the host queue. But I do please, get in the host queue, press 1, and we'll take your questions, we'll take your comments, and we thank you for listening, because we really want to start chipping away at some of these internal things that are going on that are driving the harm and the hurt and the trauma and the anger with our families. And a lot of this damage is going on in these courts. Everybody knows, and Tiscan, isn't it true, some of your worst chance of being physically accosted are in these family courts, because this is where the emotions. You can go to a criminal court all day long, and you may not ever see the possibility of someone accused of a crime being violent. But here in these family courts, you really may see a bereaved person acting out of, just desperation or instability or whatever, because like Sister Attorney Kiana said, this is our most important asset. So I wanted to go on to the issue about children, because I think this is really one of the keys, because these children, of course, none of them asked to be here. And, we as parents have that responsibility to keep our children's mental and emotional and spiritual and family together. And so children, what are we seeing in these courts that are affecting our children in a negative way, aside from being there? Being there is horrible. The crisis of you being there is awful. But if you find yourself there, how can you best work to look for a future for your family? Some do's and don'ts. What do you think, Sister Kiana?
Yeah, I think it's very important that, like you were saying in the Holy Quran and the footnotes, that you're careful with these types of cases, because I don't care. I've never met a child that did not want a family. I have, in all of my years of practicing, I've never met a child that did not want to be a part of a family. And want their parents actually together. And if they did not want them together, they darn well didn't want them, you know, didn't want them attacking each other, you know, and going to that extreme that, you know, we see when the emotions are elevated. And I think that, to me, it is very crucial that your family, your beliefs in terms of your religious belief, your culture, all of that comes into play when selecting an attorney, because that is what is going to be important about some of the decisions that are made concerning your child or children that are involved in the, you know, in the litigation that you guys are going through. So first, I think it's very important that you select someone to represent you who's familiar and, you know, has that understanding about, you know, the basis of you as a parent and as a person. And I also think it's important to have communication, proper communication with the opposing side. I don't know if we understand, you know, the real trauma it causes for children to see people that they love at odds with each other. And sometimes we, of course, this is what it's going to be. Everybody has agreed that this relationship, this marriage needs to be dissolved. There needs to be a separation. But there's always a way that you can handle that with the children so that they don't feel like they are being torn apart. And this is what I see, that the children feel the blows that you're throwing at the opposing parent in the lawsuit. And so it is very important on the language that we use in referring to the other side, and how it is we nurture that relationship, because that relationship is not over for them and the other parent. It may be over for the marriage. It may be over for, you know, someone that you were boyfriend, girlfriend, and living together, and, you know, had a child, so you're in a pseudo-affecting parent-child relationship now, trying to decide what's going to go on with the child. That may be different for the adults involved wanting or desiring this separation. But as far as the child is concerned, they feel every bit of the separation that is occurring. And I think it is important to realize that they are a part of both people. So if you're saying, you know, dad is no good and he never come around, that's they're hearing that I'm no good, you know. Yet your mom is lazy and she just want my money. They're feeling like, you know, I'm not worth it for you to give me anything. And so I think it's very important to have spiritual guidance, to have a community around you and your family during this process, actually, that is there for you and your child while going through it, and try to avail yourselves to alternative dispute resolution type things, collaborative law, mediation, where it's not I'm in court dragging you down about everything that's negative or weak about you, and you're in court trying to do the same thing to me. Because sometimes the child is there and sometimes they're not, but they always hear about it. I don't know a time that they don't hear about it, right? And so it's never good for them, you know, to feel like they're in the middle of that type of really fight, you know. It may not be physical where you have people, you know, throwing hands at each other in the hallways, but we do see that as well. But I mean, just the verbal and, you know, the psychological things that we do when, you know, we're putting on the gloves, you know, to go after somebody who is a part of our child, we have to be more aware of what it is that we're doing and how it affects the child as well.
Yes, ma'am. I agree. And again, we're talking, I'm going to look at the national agenda, and we know that anything that promotes the process of the unification of male and female in the divine institution of marriage is proper in the sight of Allah God. So we must look at the education we receive, the religion and its practice, the government, its policies and laws, because we began by talking about how marriage is so important with Allah God. And so again, that's from the national agenda. But one of the things we also wanted to note is that some of the rules that Sister Kiana has brought out, it's not just about divorce. You know, child-parent relationships are a huge part of family law. And because a lot of children are born outside of marital relationships, these rules that we're talking about where parents should be encouraged to be able to have access to their children and to have strong and proper attitudes, you know, what she's saying is don't bash the other parent. You know, don't don't talk about the other parent from the child, and try not to unreasonably withhold children from fathers and mothers, and, you know, work together. This is very, very important.
As a weapon.
And this is,
right.
Yes, ma'am, as a weapon. So we're going to take this caller, and then we'll go back continue with this conversation. But let's take this caller. I think we have Deborah Green. Dr. Deborah Green?
Yes. Can you hear me okay?
We can, Dr. Green. How are you, ma'am?
I'm fine. Thank you so much for allowing me to say something, and I greet you in the most powerful name, my Lord and Savior, and I want to also say Assalamualaikum, my sisters. Thank you. And I've been listening to Sister Kiana and yourself, Sister Pam, and everything that you all have said is so very, very critical. I just wanted to add one more aspect to it. With my history, I've worked with Child Protective Services for more than 30 years. I retired from there. And there's one thing that children often, when they're involved in situations where one parent is after the other parent and blaming and all of those, children internalize that. And they always feel that it's their fault, no matter what. And it depends.
Absolutely.
It doesn't make any difference about how old the child is and, you know, whether it's a little child or a teenager. They grow up feeling the emotional trauma of that separation. And then when you add to that the separation from the entire family being removed, which often happens to our Black children, again, the emotional trauma of not being a part of the family, not being a part of the community. So I just wanted to put that in there just to say that that is a critical factor, and it really accentuates everything that you said. Wonderful, wonderful discussion and wonderful ideas and thoughts of how important it is that we should try to work together and preserve the family. So thank you so much. I'm learning a lot.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Green, for those comments, and we look forward to talking with you as well, ma'am. Thank you for calling. Yeah, Sister Kiana.
She made an excellent observation in terms of working with children. In the CPS system, these are the same children, you know. Children don't necessarily change, even in the suit affecting the parent-child relationship. Children and their development and how they perceive their reality and their world, in a suit affecting parent-child relationship, is the same as as well as in a divorce setting with the custody matter and all of that. And so, yes, we have to be so very careful, I think, in pursuing our position in court as it relates, you know, to trying to get conservatorship or custody or whatever the term is in your jurisdiction and the visitation and all of that. And let me say this. I work as an amicus, which is sometimes an attorney that is brought into a dispute, whether it's a suit affecting a parent-child relationship or a divorce, where it's an attorney who you all have to pay as a part of the litigation that looks out for the best interest of the child, but also is the eyes of the court and makes recommendations to the court about placement and visitation and conservatorship and, you know, different things concerning the family. And so that is a very important role because the judge really takes what that attorney says with a lot of weight. And so when I have those cases, I am very much investigating a lot and spending time with the children. And this is, you know, based on my experience that I know that it's never good to play these games with alienation, to make these disparaging remarks about the other parent in the presence of the children, or, you know, to someone, even to someone that the children love, that they have a relationship with, that may go and tell the child, you know, what was said in their absence. So I think that we have to really understand. And if you go and maybe have an opportunity to talk to a child who's gone through something like that, and, you know, these children grow up to become adults who are, you know, very broken, who are very much in need of healing and help because they had to really suffer and endure, you know, and like she was saying, Dr. Deborah Green was saying, that it have internalized this that had nothing to do with them per se, but was a dispute, you know, in their lives that they were a part of. And their scars, of course, comes from how it was handled, because you can have co-parenting. You can have a suit affecting a parent-child relationship in a divorce and have, you know, matters resolved about visitation and conservatorship without all of the foolishness. You absolutely can have that. And have also connection still intact even after the relationship is gone. And so that's really the main thing in terms of, I think, in looking out for the children. You want to make sure that there's a healthy connection with both parents involved. At the end of the day, I don't know sometimes why we think that children are unaware or dumb or,
right,
you know,
not able to appreciate.
Yes, my children can probably list all of my thoughts on a piece of paper. So I don't, my husband don't have to go and try to make them see it. Or point them out,
Exactly. That does not strengthen the family. That does not strengthen your child by tearing another parent down in front of the child. So, you know what? I want to interject into this, Sister Kiana, because it's so good. But like you're saying, I think this bias toward black men, you know, the courts, because two things came to my mind. The courts already have a bias toward black men. We know this. It's racism mm-hmm. in America. And so oftentimes with women and how they view courts and this revenge mentality, this is not the place to you're not helping your child by doing that. And I wanted to quote another part because there's this other part about child support and at least supporting mm-hmm. women. Now, I don't think the quote-unquote white man system is the only way to get us to uphold our duties. And I have to be honest, some of the best clients I've ever had have been Muslim brothers because they do come to the table trying to uphold their duty. They just do. And so the quote I've seen, and I'm not saying all, but I am saying that the Quran talks about men having the attitude of providing. And so we're wanting to encourage tonight, people must be fair with one another when they come to these tables. So bias, again, against black women and mistreatment against women, these are attitudes that we need to look at and try to uproot in these court proceedings because the children are the ones that are being harmed. So I just kind of wanted to throw right. that out there. Because, again, I'm just yes. going to quote from this article, The Fall of America Amid Division, Destruction, and Death. And we were talking about what this crisis is. And Dr. Wesley Muhammad, he actually said, I absolutely attribute America's fall to the inevitable consequences of rejecting God's man in America's midst, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And so we know, you know, we have our nation building and marriage and family life in Islam is essential. And we also have some codes of conduct on how we want to encourage black people to be civilized with one another, especially when children are involved. And that's in cases where you weren't married. So I just wanted to interject that because Sister Kiana, I know I'm kind of going back and forth. You and I both know that, you know, because we're kind of doing this together tonight, it's not as many lawyers, so I'm participating mm-hmm. with you. But, I wrote down here, you know, people want dignity. And, mm-hmm. you know, the dignity part is something that we should look at, letting people keep their dignity. And this character assassination, we kind of talked about that last week. We're going to talk about it again. We talked about it in the criminal setting. But in the civil setting, this ability to just come up with all this dirt and throw all this dirt and just really just character assassinate the other side is something that, you know, a lot of lawyers encourage and really play off of in this case. And as you heard Sis Kiana say, and, you know, she knows me, but, you know, her role, she's a very fair attorney. She's a great ad litem, amicus, somebody that you wouldn't mind your child talking to. But we talk often about how these roles are what is dividing sometimes in the wrong hand. You're actually opening up your children, your homes, and all this information is being put in these court systems. And, you know, destruction is really a lot of times the, like Sis Kiana said, you might get a court order, but you don't have any substantive, really anything left because you've destroyed. You know, you destroy, you traumatize your family. So that's what we're trying to avoid tonight. Anyone want to get into the queue? Anybody have a question or a comment? Because these are things we want you all to tell your sons and your nieces and the different people who are going through these battles, these custody situations. And this is why choosing. It's all like the Honorable Elijah Muhammad say. It really, the choosing is a big issue. You know, that's with the choosing right. But when you find right. children involved, the need for healthy relationships is very important. So we have a child welfare specialist because there are two things I want Sister Kiana to announce now, and then we go into this second part of it. Again, if anyone has a question or a comment, get into the host queue. But Sister Kiana is going to host a seminar that she can talk to us in another, like, webinar on, I forget the date, but she can tell us the name and the title. And we're going to deal exclusively, I think, with that CPS issue. Is that correct, Sister Attorney Kiana?
Yes, yes. It is going to be September the 18th, and it is going to be a webinar, and we are going to discuss similar types of topics, because what people, I think, sometimes fail to see that even with CPS, it fits under the umbrella of family law, and it is a suit affecting a parent-child relationship at the most serious of levels when you're talking about terminating parental rights. And so you're in a litigation with the government, with the state of Texas, an agency with the state of Texas. And so I encourage, you know, you all to tune in on Man's Law Office Facebook page. And you can find more information also on Man's Law Office Instagram page about how to become a part of that discussion as well. But I also wanted to say, Sister Pamela, that it's very appropriate for you to be a part of this discussion. This is your area of expertise, where you,
all
I mean, work with families in all areas and phases. You know what I'm saying, in terms of dealing with family law in this way. So even the idea of this type of title with the discussion that we're having shows that it is definitely based on your experience and knowledge about, you know, how we are affected by the system and how our families are affected by
yes,
the system,
ma'am,
to even have the forethought of having this type of discussion. I'm learning a lot, and I appreciate it as well. I just wanted to make
ma'am
a comment on the child support cases that I see. Those cases are used as a weapon on both ends. From what I can see, we have filings out of spite and revenge, and we have the lack of support out of spite and revenge. I don't have a lot of good scenarios in dealing with the child support aspect of it. I do believe that we have great fathers who want to be there and who want to support their children, but we also have, like they say, we have a vaccine hesitancy. We have a hesitancy about being caught up in the system and somebody telling us when and how we can support our children financially. And so we know that as a community, right? And so a lot of times that's used as a weapon. If you don't do it how I want you to do it, when I want you to do it, then I'm going to get these people involved. And then, you know, that escalates to something different when
right
it gets on that level to even a father, because it's mostly that. I just have to be honest. It's mostly the filings against the fathers that you see that are trying to make a way, that are trying to pay. It's the emotions that come in between that, not that they're not trying to support and make a way. It's the pettiness that we've talked about earlier that comes involved at that point. And I also have to say that this is a sexist system. It really is. And I would tell my client coming in at, you know, at the initial consultation, when they come in that this the reality we dealing with. This is what it is, and this is what you're going to see. And sometimes that was a hard pill to swallow, but I had to let them know the landscape, you know, that they were coming into and dealing with, because you would have a lot of mothers too who would think that why I have to pay child support. We have that as well, when the shoe is on the other foot. So it has more to do with using it as a weapon. I don't necessarily think people have a problem with supporting their child or children financially. I don't see that. I don't believe that that's the underlying issue.
Let me say this. Chapter 65 of the Quran, it talks about don't try to force those who don't have abundance to be held under the law as if they were, you know, and so encouraging the acceptance of what a person has so they can spend out of that which Allah has given them. So, again, these unrealistic expectations, being motivated by revenge, I just kind of want to throw that out there, Sister Kiana.
Yeah.
Because I hear what
absolutely.
You're saying. Yeah.
Absolutely. And we get, like you said, we get ourselves, you know, all emotional and start filing this stuff. And then you have it where you're getting less of, you know, what you were getting at first, because you're making somebody struggle and suffer. And, you know, trying to demand from them what they don't have the ability to do. And so I think it is not something that we want to continue to engage in that manner, but encourage people to work together. And especially for our black men to do what you can. We don't want anybody, you know, to feel like they have an upper hand or able to control on either side. And it's definitely showing something to a child when you're able to say, my mom got this for me, my dad bought this for me, this is, you know, from my dad, or this is how. And sometimes I have a lot of people, especially right now in the time that we're in, that just don't have it. We have a high rate of unemployment. There are people with all types of degrees, and they're not working. And so sometimes the monetary value of getting that $500 or $800 a month can actually not, you know, help in a situation where it's just not there. But there can be other arrangements made. Maybe that they, you know, are able to assist more with homework, or, you know, have other ways that they're around in terms of making it work out for both parties, because nobody wants anything to be a burden, you know, on either side. But it's ways that it could be worked out and keep, you know, the connection intact, which is what we're talking about. Keep the healthy connection intact for the family. And the goal is to make sure that the child is provided for in every way, you know, not just financially, but in every way. So I think a lot of these things can be worked out if we think outside the box.
That's,
you know,
right.
It's not the only way, you know, to fight with the attorney general office involved to get, you know, to get something that you want. So I just wanted to add that in there.
Oh, that's so important, because, again, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, on the article called The Sacredness of the Female, he states that the disrespect of women is the reason that the earth and the world is in the condition that it is in. There can not be a new world except that there is a new and better understanding of the female, which will give us men a clearer understanding of self, and above all, a clearer understanding of Allah God in the Bible. Allah God. And so I'm going to stop there, because as Sister Kiana said, I do have to say that in my years of practice, many of the families that I've represented, I do feel when they come back, they are fine. I'm comfortable with the outcomes and pleased with some of the outcomes of how, because of the crisis that they brought, but we've made the best situations by trying to preserve the family unit and actually by demanding utmost respect for the treatment of women. Because oftentimes that is just so important. If we can get that balance and get a brother who wants to respect the woman, regardless, she is the mother of his children, she's going to be that person who's nurturing those children, who is actually right there. This is your legacy. And so, you know, then the woman then has to balance her reactions, her pain, her expectations, her, you know, mm-hmm. you might even have to raise your expectations. But there's a way to mm-hmm. Preserve these families. And that's what we wanted to talk about on the Time for Justice today, because the enemy, you're going into these courtrooms, I think they're some of the most toxic courtrooms I've ever been in. And so with that, we wanted Sister Kiana to also tell us, and again, if anyone has a question or a comment, please press the number one to get in the host queue. But we wanted Sister Kiana to tell us about another aspect of her law practice, which she actually does have a dispute resolution center. She's actually a mediator. And we talked about mediation, conflict resolution, again, a couple of weeks ago. We were talking about how all this is going on in these streets. But, of course, families, this is where some of the greatest need for conflict resolution is. So, Sister Kiana, can you tell us some of the great aspects of conflict resolution and whatever
yes.
else you want to tell us about this wonderful practice?
Yeah, it is one of the, I would think, the most rewarding thing I've done, I believe, mm-hmm. in my career is opening up the Atonement and Dispute Resolution Center, and also becoming a mediator. There is something to this process that is new or strange to people. Because it's a confidential process, you don't hear a lot of talk about it, because what we say kind of what happens in mediation stays in mediation, which is a good thing because it doesn't allow all of the talk and the argument side of it and the disputes to get out and about. We handle them, it's resolved, and you as a participant is involved in the resolution. The outcome is based on you making a decision of this is what it's going to be, and this is how we're going to end this, and this is how we're going to handle this, instead of leaving that to a third party. So as a mediator, I just try to, you know, get over the barriers of resolving the conflict and kind of help people come towards the center, so to speak, and get involved in the actual decision-making of what's going to happen with them and their families. And I see it to be a very civil process. I see it to be a very healing process. I give, and mediators should give people an opportunity to talk in a comfortable setting. Also, we have an opportunity to come together, and it is also a time where we separate, and we have people in caucus where I'm talking to a side strictly to that side and getting information, and I only share what it is that the side gives me permission to share. So it gives you an opportunity to kind of say what's on your heart, to air out some things that you're concerned about without the whole attacked aspect of the adversarial system that's built in that type of system. And so I think that in this type of law, this area of law, family law, it is very rewarding to see people walk out of there, whether it's a suit affecting the parent-child relationship, whether it's a child support issue, whether it's a divorce issue, whether it's visitation, feeling empowered. And like, okay, we did this. Despite my feelings about you or your feelings about me, we were able to come together and resolve our own matter in the way that, you know, brings honor to our belief systems, you know, to our parenting styles, and all of that, because you guys know that and are a part of that. And it's nobody telling you this is what it is and this is how it has to be. You're giving and taking and compromising and coming together to do what's best for your family at the end of the day, to do what's best for your family. And, of course, you don't get everything that you want either side, but that's part of being in a relationship, right? That's part of being a family, that you look at the whole and how it's going to help with the whole at the end of the day. And you have something that you can live with because you participated in it, you were a part of it. And that I really enjoy seeing that when they leave. I don't think it's any losers. I really don't. And I tell people, you're not going to get everything coming in the door. I tell them, you're not going to get everything. What you have in your mind, let's go ahead and erase it, because you're not going to get everything that you want to get. And that's fine, and that's okay, because this is a process that you're working through and you're working on with another person, and they're not getting everything that they want either. But at the end of the day, you all are making a decision and empowering yourselves and your family by what it is that you do today and how you handle your matter, you know, today. And so mediation to me is great for family law and any type of dispute, dealing with this area of law.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Because as you're saying, you know, again, let's put it in perspective, because Sister Ava had a wonderful class yesterday about you being able to get, you know, what you want. And the real issue and the difference to me is that you got to set realistic expectations when you're in these courts. And that's really the part of the time for justice that we want you all to take home. Court is different. You know, this is a crisis. And so don't come to courts not understanding that this is a system of white supremacy where it is intended to destroy black people. The courts are not balanced. They're not oftentimes able to give justice, so they just kind of give what they can. And families are fighting internally, and so by the time, you know, sometimes y'all people bring us this, you know, which is this unfortunate, these, you know, situations, then we have to deal with solutions that are within our power. And we're trying to get people also to carry the message that the more bickering, the more unrealistic expectations, the needs for revenge, and some of this, you know, let me throw all the dirt at this person and let's see if we can litigate that. Well, again, you throw dirt at one person, and it's right, Sister Kiana, then your dirt is getting ready to come out.
Mm-hmm,
and again,
absolutely.
Some lawyers' clock is ticking, okay? Their hourly rate is just racking up, and the poor child is, you know, suffering. And so this is just not the way to handle our differences. So any callers, any comments, please press the number 1 to get in the host queue. We're almost finished. And so I think we've actually really did what we could with this conversation. So I wanted to, the questions we usually ask, which are, you know, and I'm going to throw all three out there if anything really you want to address, because have you seen the need as a black person to represent black people? In representing our people, is there a need? to parent or nurture our clients, seeing things from their perspectives? And is there a need for creativity where clients lack resources or, you know, different stories? And really the time, because I want to throw this out here, and you and I talked about this real quick because I think it's important. There was an article or a story a couple weeks ago where a judge ordered a mother to take the shot. And it really sent shockwaves through the country. They were in a child support situation, mm-hmm. had nothing really to do with the shot. And this judge, you know, prowling into this person's business, overstepped his bounds, I believe, and ordered that type of thing. And so, again, in the context of sometimes parenting and nurturing our people and making mm-hmm. sure, you know, we're Black, y'all. We see the handwriting on the
right.
wall. You got to approach this real different. So as we're coming into these toxic environments like America's court system. So did you
right.
want tell
yes.
us something? And also
I can say
drugs are a big thing too.
Yeah, I can say too that for the most part, our judges don't look like us. They don't come from where we come from. And I believe that that's nationwide.
Mm-hmm.
Because we know, you and I know the percentage of Black attorneys. So, I mean, just think about the percentage of Black judges, right? And judges who, you know, have possibly stood in your shoes or had your similar type of experience or that is aware of, you know, cultural values and beliefs and all of that. And so
right.
I want to go back even to the mediation, the benefits of mediation. That's one of them. Because you think that you're going in there throwing dirt and slinging something on the other side, and that judge don't see it from either way that you're bringing it. They have their mm-hmm. own subjective analysis of the stuff
right.
that you're coming and bringing in their court, and the way that you think that it's being presented and accepted is totally not
yes,
to them, because that's not their reality, right? And they don't care. Let's just put it like
that's
that.
Right.
They don't care. And so my as a mediator, and with mediators, we are trained to care about you all being able to resolve your matter in the best of way, right? And to, you know, care about how intact we can keep the connections and the family, you know, in place in terms of our role. So that's kind of built into the mediation process. So let me say that. And then the aspect of, yes, having to nurture and be there for our clients based on that they are going into a toxic environment. Where they are giving someone the power that do not care, really, for the most part, about you and your family and your legacy and your situations that you have going on and who is seeing it from, you know, whatever lens that they're seeing it from to make their decision, you kind of have to be able to help them get through that part of it in dealing with the litigation and the system and not really harming themselves more by trying to throw in everything, including the kitchen sink, right? Because like you said, you know, you start saying, oh, I got you. I'm going to get him because you know something about him or you know something about her. And then on the other side, they're going to pull it out. Oh, here go my card, you know, what I know about you. And at the end of
right.
the day, that judge could say, neither one of you are fit, right? So,
exactly.
Then that, where does that leave, you know, the child and, you know, the family and the connection? So we just have to be careful in in, you know, going in this into this type of setting, environment, with a mindset that this is kind of the best way to handle things. When we go with the pettiness and the drama, and all of that, because you kind of are feeding into your own demise, really. And the breakup of your family, when you approach this type of matter in that way. So we just have to caution, you know, our clients in regards to that, and to be like very honest, you know, with the reality of things, because I know, you know, just here in Houston, we've had, you know, the Black Girl Magic takeover, but that was years in the making, right? And yet and still, that's not predominant throughout Texas, right, where we have any type of representation that we should even feel, you know, comfortable about handling our intimate affairs in this type of manner, you know?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am, that's beautiful. And so we're down actually to 3 minutes, and so we want to thank everyone for listening. And as we begun, we said that we oftentimes ask people to rethink these decisions because many times they are in haste. I see an article written by our sister Nisa Muhammad, and it was untitled Marriage and Divorce in the African Community. It was written in 2011, but she made a really great point. You know, children learn how to resolve conflict by watching their parents disagree, she says. Sometimes kids will make up. And so oftentimes you think that if you're having some conflict that that's like not, you know, some end-all, be-all. But we want to encourage our listeners to, you know, these marriages work, and especially make the child relationships work in these co-parenting environments, because this is at the root of where we're seeing the attack on the Black masculinity, and we're seeing the girls being under attack because their parents and our homes are what they are. They're, you know, living in Satan's environment. So, like I said, I wanted to thank you all. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Sister Attorney Kiana. And once again, Sister Kiana is having a webinar on, say that date again, Sister Kiana.
September the 18th.
And it'll be on 2 o'clock Central Time. And I think it's the, what, Man's Law Office group on Facebook. Is that your information?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And it's going to be very interesting and powerful. So also, we are going to, inshallah, have a part two to our conversation about defending the innocent, because we had some feedback from this wonderful topic, and we really, really wanted to get into further defending the innocent. So I would like to thank you all for listening to A Time for Justice on the Elevated Places Network. I would like to thank the Elevated Places team, my producer, Sister Samaya Muhammad. I would like to thank our sister, Minister Ava Muhammad, for the Elevated Places Network, Sister Rona Muhammad, Sister Donna Muhammad, Brother Terrence Muhammad. I would like to thank all of the listeners and ask you all to listen to some of the archives. And we must remind you all to listen to Ask Dr. Ava, which is the show hosted by our sister Dr. Ava Muhammad, and Brother Terrence is her co-host, and it comes on Thursdays, every Thursday at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. That's Ask Dr. Ava. And please tune in next week for the Elevated Places Network presents A Time for Justice. We thank you all for your time, and we pray a lot that you all got some, you know, some information that we can take out into the public and start to help our families when they're in crisis. Thank you very much, and we're going to sign off on the Time for Justice. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.